Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You're listening to the Clean Comedy Podcast with James Creviston and Luke LaCoy.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Clean Comedy Podcast. It's James, and I'm here today with my co-host, Danny Hada Wee Wee.
Very nice, very nice. Perfect as always, James.
I was gonna say I was gonna try to go Halloween. I couldn't get. I wanted to say Halloweeny, and I knew I couldn't. I was like, all right. I gave up halfway through.
I still got leftover Halloween candy right here, so it's never too late.
Wait, is that king full size? Is that king size?
That looks like a full bar.
It is a full bar. Shout out to my mother-in-law. She had two trick or treaters this year, and so your old boy cleaned up on the leftover full size candy.
So I don't know. I think you were in the chat when I sent this to the group for our friends from the Disney Tonight Show podcast. But we rented a cotton candy machine because we threw a big party at our church for Halloween, and we kept it till Monday. So we did the party on Saturday, and it's Halloween was on Sunday. I made cotton candy for trick or treaters that came to our house.
Perfect.
And I like gave it out or whatever. And the first kids that came up, I was like, hey, you guys want cotton candy? They were all that like stranger danger thing where they're like, I think we're only supposed to take like pack stuff. I'm like, no, I'm making it right here. You can watch me. I'm not going to put like razor blades, like relax. Okay. And it was cool. And then I decided like, oh, I'm going to make myself a double. So I made a cotton candy and then I added more sugar and doubled. It was huge. It was like as big as my head. And then I just shoved it all in my mouth at once to see if I could do it. No one was happy with that.
Yeah. It disintegrates right in your mouth. Yeah. It's fantastic in that way. You know, yeah. I got a Butterfinger in my hand. This sucker gets all in your teeth. No, thank you. I mean, it's delicious. And I'm obviously going to eat this as soon as we finish the recording. But I'm just saying, cotton candy, great candy.
Do you know that a dentist created cotton candy?
Huh.
That sounds like a good way to get more clients, I think. That's what I think. I'm just saying. All right. So now that we've covered Halloween and all that, we have a great guest today. I found him via Reddit. He was asking the comedy community what they wanted to see in a comedy club because he wants to buy and put together a comedy club. And I was like, man, what a novel idea to ask comedians what they like about comedy. And he's not a comedian himself. He's a businessman. But he went to the community and said, hey, guys, what do you love? What do you hate? What can I do better? How can I was like, man, this is a guy that has it together. Because, Danny, you and I talk about this. And I've talked about this with Luke and David. We all talk about what we hate and love about comedy clubs. And he came straight to the source to comedians. And it's funny. Wouldn't you think more comedy club owners would come to comedians and say, hey, guys, what can we do to make the experience better for you? Right? We're the entertainment.
You would think. I think a lot of people are care more about the bottom line, right? And they're like, well, you know, if I can also make this a quote-unquote restaurant, and if I can also do this and that, and you know, so I wish they did, but I understand why they don't. So good on you, Travis.
Yeah. Okay. So please welcome Travis Beeler. He's going to come and talk about it. It's okay. No, good. So Travis, explain to us what your goal was, how you got into this crazy comedy world, and how you. I mean, most comedians would tell you never own a comedy club. First of all most comedians are crazy. So you're going to know that we're all little nuts, right? And we have to be comedians. But what got you down this road where you thought like, oh, I should own a comedy club? Well, what I did was, you know, I've enjoyed stand-up comedy basically since I was a little kid. I got my first comedy tape, which was John Fox. He was a dirty comic from way back in the 80s. Loved him. Me and my brother or my cousin, we would just, you know, giggle like maniacs listening to his tape. And then when I was about 15 years old, I got introduced to Sam Kinison. And Sam was talking about all the things that a typical 15-year-old boy would be going through. You know, your girlfriend broke up with you, you know, your religion, you know, things like that. And so I've always enjoyed stand-up comedy. I've always gone to comedy shows local here in my area. And for a while, the comedy scene was okay for what it was. And then as time went on, I looked at my retirement and said, well, this is 401k, isn't going to cover anything. So I got into real estate and made a, you know, a few bucks. Well, as time continued on, I've always wanted to own a comedy club. I thought it was really neat. I've always enjoyed it. I have a business mindset. And I also come from a comedy fan type of viewpoint. And so as my real estate portfolio started growing and I started looking at, potentially picking one up, happened to be looking online and I found somebody was selling a comedy club.
Oh, nice.
And I went, great, this is my perfect opportunity to buy one. And so went and talked to the person. I got an NDA. It's a comedy club in the Midwest. And he was selling. And I went, great, let's have a conversation. And he, admittedly, his numbers weren't great when we were looking at him. Now, to be fair, this is the middle of the pandemic. So, of course, nobody's numbers were great. And so I was talking to the bank. And the bank said, listen, you know, we understand the pandemic hit everybody equally. Really sorry, can't help you. So as I was talking to him, he was in the middle of retiring. And so I said, well, you know, let's go ahead and look at the other, because he owns multiple comedy clubs. As he said, this one's already hitting its numbers. I don't live anywhere near these comedy clubs. It already has a manager. And because of technology and things like that, you can run a lot of things remotely. So in the middle of all that, I always like getting perspective of both sides of the equation. So I already know what I like and what I don't like when I go to a comedy club. And I got to thinking, well, I remember watching a couple of comedy podcasts and they were saying, these are our complaints about, you know, comedy clubs. And so I'm like, great. So I, like you say, I posted on Reddit and I said, guys, this is what I'm looking for. Tell me what you like, what you don't like. You know, there may be legitimate reasons why these things happen, but let me go ahead and take a peek. And it blew up. I got something like 20,000 people had viewed it. Like tons of people started private messaging me. I've got huge amounts of notes and things like that. Like I was even looking at like beyond comedy, just your standard get up, tell jokes, go home. Yeah. I was looking at potentially how do I grow your career as a comedian? How do I get the word out that you're the new guy in town? How do I how do I develop new talent? So like, you know, the kid who thinks he's funny with his friends, he decides he wants to, you know, grow a pair and get on stage and really go for it. And how do I help him, you know, grow to have some stage presence and things like that? So that's kind of where you and I got introduced and we started talking a little bit. And unfortunately the secondary comedy club, that one fell through. So now I'm kind of in a lull trying to find either another comedy club that wants to sell, somebody wants to retire, or just saying, you know what, I'm gonna build my own.
Right. So what was the number one complaint that comedians had, and then what was the number one thing that they thought could be done better?
Couple of things. The biggest one that I noticed was pay. A lot of comics were saying, listen, you know, pay just really isn't that great. And honestly, I was looking at this particular comedy club when they were selling, their pay wasn't that great either. I want to say it was somewhere in the neighborhood of around $500 per day's worth of shows across your opener, your headliner, and your feature act.
So those three acts had to split $500.
Correct. So I didn't have a breakdown, but my assumption was it was probably $50, $100, and then $250 per show.
Yeah.
Total guess. The other thing that I noticed was the comedy condo. I had the option of picking up the comedy condo, and everybody was kind of like, this is kind of sketchy, you know, and I don't want to sleep in the same bed where, you know, there were some shenanigans going on. And so I was looking at that thinking, okay, well, rather than me saying, hey, here's this, you know, crappy mattress you got to sleep on in some podunk little town, how about I take the money that I would pay for the comedy condo, because I'd have to pay a mortgage and all that.
how about I just take that and I just say, you know what, there's a hotel right down the road. You know, the beds are going to be clean. The, you know, you're going to get free Wi-Fi. You're going to get a little bit better experience.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, those were kind of.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, those are good. Those are good. Danny, did you have things that you would have complained about as a comedian? I think pay is the biggest one, honestly. I think like that's.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for me, it was never like a huge issue because I live in San Jose and I would perform at the San Jose Improv.
Right.
But, you know, I remember doing a show like the Sacramento Punchline. You know, that drive isn't nothing, you know. And I think a lot of comics, especially when they're trying to kind of take it on the road, they don't have the luxury of just driving there, driving home and being like, well, that was fun. They are really trying to make a little kind of tour out of this, you know? So yeah, having a clean place to stay, or, you know, maybe something a little bit more substantial than just gas money, obviously is something that's going to be pretty important for those folks.
Yeah. And in big cities like LA and New York, most comedians aren't getting paid for their, you know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes on stage. It's just like, hey, you're getting exposure. But I think that's such a, I don't want to say a predatory way to do things, because it's not the right word for it, but like the club is making money. Like what they're telling people, hey, comedians are going to be here. You pay us to see them. And comedians don't see the benefits of that. Now, there's another comedian that I've been talking to in New York that wants to organize a comedians union. And I think that might be the way to go forward. At first, I was very hesitant on it. The more I thought about it, the more I spoke to other comedians, I realized that's probably going to have to be something. I mean, this happened at the Comedy Store. The Comedy Store basically unionized, not really, but they like went on strike until they got wages that they raised. Now, those wages haven't been raised since like, I think it was like 1978 or something like that. Like,
oh, yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, they haven't been raised, but something like that could happen if comedians organize. Now, the problem is there's too many people that are willing to say, I'm going to do it for free, forget you guys, and not stand together. And that's going to hurt everybody. And that's, I mean, there's a lot of movements like that happening right now. There's the big anti-work movement on Reddit that wants to help people unionize. There's a lot of stuff that's coming. And I think we're probably 2 to 5 years away from some kind of organized comedy union or comedy collective or something like that. I don't know what it's going to be yet, but something like that. And I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, I would agree. In fact, one of the things I was looking at when I was, you know, researching all of this was there's a lot of comics who are just desperate. You know, they want the stage time. In fact, That's one thing I kind of wanted to break, I guess, for lack of a better term. You know, you're always going to get so many people and you only have so much stage time, and that's fun. But what I wanted to do was, you know, I remember seeing these documentaries on the Comedy Store and things like that. And Mitzi was kind of the queen of comedy at the time. And if she didn't like you, you weren't getting on stage. And if you weren't getting on stage, then it was really tough for you to grow your career. And I kind of want to avoid that. I don't want to be that kind of owner where somebody goes, listen, you know, you really got to, you know, you got to kiss the ring, so to speak. And maybe Travis, you know, kind of helps you out. It's like, I don't want to be that guy. I want to be the guy where somebody calls me up and they say, oh my God, you're playing this room, man, you're going to love Travis. He's going to be the great guy. He's going to take care of you and all that. Now, that being said, you know, because you only have so much stage time available, maybe you go up on a Tuesday in front of 10 people or something like that. And it sucks, but you know, at least you're getting something, you know? But you're right. I think that a union would be helpful in a lot of ways. I think you're going to get a lot of resistance in that because, yeah, you're like you're just saying, you're going to have some people who just go, listen, these guys are doing their thing and I'll work over here for free. And, you know, club owners, admittedly, they have bills to pay. And I'll give you a perfect example. I don't know if you guys know this, but do you know how much it costs to lease a building, if you assuming you don't own it? I'll give you real world numbers. This particular place that I was looking at in the Midwest to just exist, the mortgage for the bank, the lease and the insurance was $15,000 a month. Wow. And that was just to exist. No butts in seats, no, not even staff. Just that is it. So you're talking, you know, $180,000 a year just to exist. So that's one of the reasons why you have these high expenses. So.
Now, when you were looking at the comedy club that you were wanted to buy, when you were looking at the numbers, let's say pre-pandemic, because I'm sure they gave you some pre-pandemic
numbers. They did.
What did they get most of their revenue from? Was it from food service or was it from tickets? F&B, I guess, right?
Yeah, their ticket sales were pretty good. But the thing that really where the profit center, I would say, would be alcohol. the without giving you too much, the alcohol is up there. I was utterly shocked, honestly, and I was looking at this going, I should be in the alcohol business.
I mean, people, I think, you know, anybody that's worked in the restaurant business or at bars, they'll tell you, right? I mean, the margin on alcohol, I mean, that was going to be my guess, because I mean, a lot of the shows I performed at, you know, they're like, oh yeah, yeah, just get a guest list, whatever, they can come in for free, but it's a 2-drink minimum.
Yeah.
And you better believe those butts, we don't care, the seats are going to be there regardless of if the butts are there or not. So long as, if there are going to be butts there, there's going to be some drinks on those tables, you know.
In fact, I went to see, and I'm not going to mention the club only because I have one thing I want to pick at them a little bit about. but other than that, they do wonderful, wonderful work. I would say they're probably 95-98% perfect in my eyes. But you're right. I went with 4 friends to see a very large name comic over the weekend, and between drinks, food, not including tickets, I spent $183.
Yep. Is that for 4 people or is that just for you?
For 4 people, yes.
Yeah. So, oh, yeah, that's about $50 a person, and that makes sense. That's what I would expect to spend on a night out with my wife would be about $100 for both of us, right?
And I'm in the same boat, too.
Janie's like, oh, no, that's way too much. McDonald's drive-thru, dollar menu.
Cotton candy.
Hey, the cotton candy machine only cost us $65 for 3 days, so I was happy. And it came with sugar and the little cones.
Ooh, you got it all. Nice.
I got to look into that. I do own a bounce house. I may have to look into owning a cotton candy machine.
Dude, you should. I literally am thinking about getting into some party supply business. So I don't know. It sounds good.
They are lucrative.
They are very lucrative.
Yeah, never mind bars.
Yeah. So.
Oh, go ahead.
So when you were talking to the club, what did the club – the people that were selling you, what did they say was their biggest, besides obviously leasing or whatever, what was the biggest holdback maybe to growth or to getting to that next percentage in profit or whatever? What was the thing that they felt was holding them back? Was it comedians or was it?
Surprisingly not. This person, he's retiring. He's an older guy. Very, very nice, very informative. He was just really paranoid about COVID. Now, not necessarily in that they were being unsafe or anything like that, but his particular state is wide open. Like, they can open tomorrow, not a problem. He was paranoid that he was going to be, to open up, they would get COVID, the public would find out about it, and they would shut them all down.
Yeah.
That just simply wasn't the case. I was looking at this from a perspective of, okay, you're wide open. However, there's nothing stopping you from putting like a little small table off to the side with wipes and masks and things like that, just as a, you know, in case any patrons want that. I think he's kind of stuck in his own ways, so to speak. He's not really willing to, you know, expand out on anything. Because he actually doesn't have a mortgage on the club as well, he's kind of happy just chugging along and making a good 20 grand, 30 grand a year and being just fine with that. Meanwhile, I'm looking at this going, there's so much potential here. So for example, you know, you can have more shows. Like, he had one show on a Friday and I'm like, why are you not doing 2 shows?
3, man. 3 shows, yeah, exactly. On Friday.
Yeah. Why are you not doing it? Why are you not offering, now this is not a revenue thing for me personally, but this is just something I think the comics would like. One comic told me that their show was, when they record it, that the club would charge them.
Yes, lots of clubs in LA do that.
I was shocked by that. I'm like, are you kidding me? That's ridiculous. No,
yep.
No, you want to come record, that's fine. Get your iPhone. Or I have no problem with me having a camera there and just saying, hey, listen, I'll send you a copy of an MP5 or whatever.
Yeah.
MP4 file. But I was shocked by that. Just it's like, listen, this is your talent. This is an art, you know, however you want to put it. This is an art. So you're going to tell your artist, you know, I'm only going to give you so many paintbrushes. I'm only going to give you so much paint, and you're going to do it the exact way I want to have it happen. You're not going to get the kind of magic that you're looking for. You're not going to get that spark where somebody walks out of your club, tears rolling down their face, laughing and having a great time and having a good memory. There were things like more shows throughout the week. I even looked at very briefly. I'm not sure of the economics of it, but as you grow as a comic, one of the things that happens is, let's say Danny's going on stage, But he's going to be in Florida. I don't live anywhere near Florida. I'd love to see Danny perform. I can't see Danny perform. Mm-hmm. But Danny's got a decent following on Twitter, on Facebook, whatever. Wouldn't it be kind of neat to be able to see his show? Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking, hey, why don't I broadcast his show? You know, it won't be as much as a ticket. Maybe it's $10 or something like that. But now I can sit down on my computer and I can watch Danny perform. And then I can say, hey, Danny, listen, I'm going to charge $10 per, and you go ahead and perform the show, and I give you $5 or, you know, whatever. There were a lot of little things like that that I think would be helpful. I think getting away from, not necessarily getting away from, but slightly better quality of food. Because, you know, when you go in, you know, you're like, okay, I got bar food. Okay, that's fine. But what happens if you say, hey, I can get a steak, or I can get like a nicer experience? We have a movie theater around here called Cinetopia. And Cinetopia, you would go in to a movie theater, and this was an adult's movie theater. Like, I could get a glass of beer, and I could get a steak, and I can get higher end stuff. And so I was like, that'd be kind of nice to have, just not necessarily that being only it, but being having the option of that for various people. So
yeah,
that was kind of the overall type of things that I think would be helpful to help him grow, but he's just too conservative.
I think that's genius, borrowing some of the stuff from movie theaters. I mean, I think specifically what you said, especially in the age of COVID, having the option to quote unquote dial in and stream, you know, a local comedy show. I've always said with, you know, talking to James, that it's sometimes the random local comic that's like the funniest, because they have some different perspective, less jaded maybe, I don't know. But it seems like such a win-win-win, because for the actual club, like, okay, so I need a camera and internet, right? And then aside from that, it's just basically pure profit on top of that. And that's obviously going to benefit the comic and the folks that are willing to pay. Great. It's not like, oh man, I dumped all this money on internet and now I can't use it. It's like, well, no, it's you're going to use the internet. So yeah, that's, I think that's super cool. So I give you credit for that, Travis. And also thank you for calling out my incredible following on Twitter and Facebook.
And that's the truth, is there was a lot of clubs during the pandemic that were doing live stream comedy shows, mm-hmm. but they were doing them Zoom style like this, where, like, you know, there was a host that maybe you're the host, Travis, and then we're all quiet or silenced or whatever, and then they would bring you on, so then your box would be there. But if you're doing it straight from the stage, all you're doing is streaming it to the show's website, and then that's it. Like, there's no other additional thing. And I know with programming, yes, you have to put in, you know, the viewer and whatever, and stuff, but it'd be super easy to charge, make a pay portal. Here you go. You can pay remotely for $5, and you can watch the show. And if you want to watch all three shows on Friday, it's, you know, instead of charging you 15 for all three, we'll charge you 12 or 10 or whatever it is. And then you can, you know, I think that's amazing.
And the thing that I liked about the idea was, now Danny, as he gets bigger, he can have that much more money in his pocket. So let's say we do charge $10 and we say, listen, Danny, the streaming service is going to take $1. So it leaves $9. All right. So then you and I'll split it, you know, 450, 450. So if he sells 100 people that want to watch, well, he's made $450 for that one show, and he's done nothing different. He's done no extra goodies, none of that stuff. So he's...
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com, and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
He's seeing more money, and that kind of negates some of the complaints that comics have had about cash not really being there for him.
And that's the other thing too, right? If you're giving them a code, like Danny's code is Danny, you know, mm-hmm. Danny, come, if you want to watch my shows, come support me, put Danny in there, and mm-hmm. it'll, you know, to let them know that, hey, you're here to see me. And if it's James, you put in James, and then whatever it is, whatever the code is, and then comedians can share it on their Twitter, their Instagram, whatever. That's going to help the club. That's going to help them. That's going to help generate revenue. I love that idea. I think that's genius. Now, there's going to be some comedians like, well, what if people see my material and then they steal it from there? It's like, okay, the odds of that are like, very slim. Like, you're more likely to have your material stolen at open mic from another open micer than you are on the internet. I mean,
right?
Put their stuff on the internet, and yeah, there's bias and there's people that do similar stuff, but I mean, really, if you're funny, it's gonna rise to the top. No one's gonna miss.
Right, and you know, we all know the famous comedians who steal. So
yeah. as long as I'm not seeing Carlos Mencia in the chat box there, I know we're good. Right, Danny.
Carlos is there.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, I'm gonna say it. I don't care. Come at me, Carlos.
Exactly. As I was looking, like, hey, Carlos is here. Stop telling your jokes.
Stop telling jokes. Sorry, comics. Stop telling jokes. Yeah. No, I feel like we all know also the comics that, you know, make you put these babies away. And for the podcast listeners holding up a phone, right? You got to put those and check them at the door. You know, I feel like even if you're doing the stream, it's pretty easy. If I'm a particular comic about my intellectual property, quote unquote, great. We kill the feed when you're going up. Nobody's putting in your code anyways. So, you know, no harm, no foul, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the other thing is, right, you could control it for the comedians. You can even say, hey, you could opt in or opt out of that, and then that I would if these comedians opted out, they're going to go later in the show, and then we'll cut the stream at that point and whatever. Yep. That's end of story, you know.
And that's kind of the thing that I was thinking was, you know, looking at the streaming idea from multiple perspectives. I was looking at it from, okay, Danny's coming up, and Danny and I have a deal, and we're going to cut, you know, Danny in on it. We do it as a club, as just a blanket thing. And then if they want to opt out, like you're talking about, they opt out, but then the comics are getting more. If you do it on a club basis, then you run the additional goodie of, hey, this comic this comedy club does this. So you have the reputation of, oh, well, this other comic is coming, I can't make it for whatever reason, but hey, I know that they do this. So yeah, you're adding an additional revenue stream for basically everybody. Now, granted, you know, I'd be losing out on, you know, the drinks and the things like that. But I mean, like Danny's saying, it's pretty much pure profit.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you a question.
Yeah, what you got?
So it seems like obviously a lot of this, you have to obviously consider it as a business, right? There's the business aspect, there's the talent aspect. You can't really have one without the other. But what would you say, because you mentioned you're coming into this first and foremost as a fan. There are certain, I would imagine, sacrifices you're willing to make. Let's call it kind of for the love of the game, right? I mean, What percentage of coming into this is, hey, great business opportunity, and what percentage is basically like, no, I want to create a comedy haven? Like, is it like a 60-40 thing, 50-50? Is it more, you know, I'll take less profit if it means, you know, like what's, you know, how much do you weigh one versus the other?
The business aspect of it, you know, originally when I was looking at it, when I first came into it, it was like 90% just passion. Just, it was like, hey, it'd be kind of nice to be able to come down and say, hey, this is my club. I own AA club, you know, that kind of thing. And then just walking around like King Chick. But but as you, you know, you look at real numbers, you know, you got to kind of come to the realization of, hey, you know, this is a real business and there are real expenses. And the bank doesn't care that you enjoy saying this is my club. The bank wants their, you know, $10,000 a month for the mortgage, you know. So, you know, when I first initially started looking at it, I would say for the first probably like day or two, it was 90-10, and then it slowly came back to 50-50. If it was just business for the amount of work and the amount of headache and the amount of thing like that, there's a way easier way of making money. Give you a perfect example. I own some real estate. It's real easy for me to go out and just go buy another house or another, you know, small apartment building or anything like that. You can always do those kinds of things. But that is just a standard, you know, okay, yeah, I can make money and on and on and on, but there's no passion behind it. And so having the ability for me to say, wow, this is something that I can build and I think would be really neat to have, that's kind of also driving it in the background for me. So while it is 50-50, if the passion wasn't there, I probably wouldn't be going down this road, honestly. In fact, I even went down from the perspective of, and this is where I was going to ding the club about, was this fairly named comic. They were, he was in the middle of a joke. Now, he is 20 minutes into his 45-minute set. And we've already gotten our drinks. We've already done our thing, whatever. I haven't paid yet. Lady comes by and says, hey, here you go. And I'm like, oh, hey, I'm scrambling. I give her my card. She goes, okay, cool. Type in your tip and all that kind of jazz. Hit my tip. I hit submit and I turn back and he says something. I forget what. And the crowd erupts. And my first thought was, fuck, I missed the joke. I didn't come to pay attention to the waitress. I came to pay attention to the comic. So little things like that, as we're kind of going through this process, I'm looking at it from a fan's perspective. I'm looking at it from a comics perspective. I'm looking from the business side of things. All of those things kind of come into how I'm forming how I want this to look.
Yeah. And that check drop is the biggest thing that always happens in every show, happens for every headliner. They know what's going to come. Yep. It's terrible for fans. That's the thing, is because they're in the middle of your set and you're like, I came here to see this. I didn't come here to do this thing. I always thought there was a burger place. Oh man, what was the place? I forgot. There's a burger place that used to have iPads on the table, and you could order everything that way and then pay that way, and it was just done. Like, then your food would come out. I was thinking that would be, if I was going to own a comedy club, that's probably the way I would go, just because it would make it so much easier. People would not have to interact. Just food comes out, it's already paid, you can put the tip in there, you're done. Like, end of story. That's it. Before you leave for the night, you know, mm-hmm. the table closes out and all that stuff.
I have a little bit.
Oh, what?
I was going to say, you save a little bit on the wait staff as well. You know, yeah. You just have food runners and maybe not as many servers, right?
Yeah. And I wasn't thinking about, like, from that perspective. I was just thinking, like, I hate being interrupted in a comedy show, like, at that. Because I've been to many at clubs to go see a headliner that I've been dying to see. Mm-hmm. And now I just missed 5 minutes of their set because I had to deal with the waitress. And I'm not trying to be mean to them. I understand they have a job. But yeah, check drop is the most annoying part.
Obviously. Yeah, in fact, the one thing that I had looked at very, very briefly, and I would have to think of the logistics behind it, but in this particular club, what they do is they seat you about half an hour before, mm-hmm. you order your food, on and on and on. And this is my thinking too, because I sent one of my friends down there to that club, quietly check it out, tell me what you see. And they had waitresses who were literally writing it down on a piece of paper. And I'm like, no. They get a little iPad looking thing on their hand. They walk up. What do you want? They order it. And then as they're going, they're putting in whatever they need to do. Yeah, exactly. It's being sent back. They can do whatever they need to do. Then about 5 minutes before showtime, I want them to walk back around and say, listen, not necessarily last call, but the last you're going to see me until you push a little button on the table to come get me, right? Mm, yeah. So then the people that are done and they've got their drinks, everybody's ready, they can just sit there and wait. But if there's somebody who says, hey, you know what? I'd love to have another drink. I want like a little, you know, I don't know, that was easy.
Airplane.
Exactly, like a little airplane button.
They're at Flappers, they have a little flashlight that you push the button on, it lights up at your table.
Oh, nice.
And then someone, because they always have someone standing in the room to see, and then their staff will come around or whatever. I think that's perfect, like a little light.
Right.
Maybe the light on your thing lights up instead, mm-hmm. or something like that. But yeah, so it's visible.
Exactly. And so that way I looked at it from the perspective of, you know, I wouldn't have missed the joke. We've already been paid. Everybody been happy, because that was – you know, and I lost a good, you know, decent amount of joke because people were laughing and I'm sitting there going,
right. It's the tough counterpoint. You never really know when a joke is coming, right? I mean, it's not like, this is a good time. He's been pretty boring for the last 10 minutes. Probably a good time to pay my check. You know, it's a tough counterpoint, but yeah, it's frustrating. I get it.
Yeah. Well, I did talk to another fairly named comic as well, because a few people had pointed me out. And as I was talking with him, he was telling me some of the things that he liked and disliked and things like that. And I was hoping that, you know, if anybody had heard, or maybe you guys ever hear and whatnot, you know, kind of see if there's anybody out there. In fact, he had checked to see if there was a guy that he knew who was debating on retiring. Because when you're looking at this from the business perspective, you know, every day you're not fully functioning is money lost. Yeah. And so what I would hope is that I would be able to find a club that's already there. Maybe it's struggling a little bit. Maybe it needs a little bit of oomph, you know, that kind of thing, fresh coat of paint, whatever. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of ultimately where I'm trying to be. In fact, one thing I had looked at today, and I was talking to James earlier today earlier before we started on this, I was like, well, you know what? I'll go ahead and I'll figure it out. I found a place that looked good on paper. They wanted $35 per square foot per year. And I was like, all right, cool. Yeah, and you have to work it all out in your head. It's basically $30,000 a month. And I went, swing and a miss.
Yeah, that's weird.
And so, and because, you know, when you're trying to get a place up, you're looking at it thinking, oh, crap, you know, I got to hire staff, get a menu, get comics, get all these things. That's easily going to take a few months. You've lost $90,000.
Yeah.
Just sitting.
who exists.
Now, I have a question. Did they ever, any of the clubs that you talked to ever mention who the most expensive comedian was and how they account for that? Like, Kevin Hart wanted to come and he wants $15,000 to come perform at the club or something.
No, but I know there are something to do. I did look. I found a talent agency website where they were listing comics. In fact, that was one thing that I was debating on doing was you kind of have tiers of comedy clubs. Yes. You have your road dog comics, you know, nobody knows who they are, you know, except for maybe locally. Then you've got, you know, your higher end ones like I'll pick on Helium. They've got, you know, named comics that you would recognize, things like that. And then of course you got your 2,000 seat halls and things like that. Yeah. And I looked, and they're not cheap. To give you an idea, I forget who it was I had looked up. I want to say it was like Jim Norton or something like that. And they wanted like $15,000.
Yeah.
And my first thought was, is that $15,000 for the weekend? Is that $15,000 per show? What is that?
Yeah.
Because that was the other thought that I had was this particular club that I was looking to buy, they would occasionally have like a named person come through. And I thought, well, that'd be kind of a neat thing to have, right? Let's say we have, you know, your road dog comics, you know, you have your, I was thinking kind of like a multi-tier type of thing. You're going to have your open mics on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. You have some guys who are working through the materials, whatever. And then as, you know, the week goes, you know, you have people who a little bit more established, a little more established, then maybe once a month, maybe once every 2 weeks, whatever, you have a named person come in and you could say it's an intimate night with whoever. And if it's 100 or 200 people, but maybe, I don't know, like a Kevin Hart or, you know, maybe not that big, but you know what I mean?
Kevin Hart does comedy clubs. He's done comedy clubs in
all right, cool.
In LA. He bumped my show in LA. Thank you, Kevin. I like Kevin. It's all good. Go ahead.
But my thought was, instead of, you know, you have somebody who comes in who's everybody would recognize. So instead of, you know, you're going to this 2,000 seat hall, maybe you come in and, you know, you're spending $50 or even $75 to see a comic, but you're 20 feet in front of them. You know, so I thought, well, maybe that might be a neat little thing for people to have as well.
I think locally here, that's something that, you know, the Improv offers, which is nice. Like I'll go up and have stage time and it's, you know, the quote unquote bringer weekday shows, you know, and we're performing. And then, you know, over the weekend, I'm coming back as an audience member to watch like Craig Robinson, you know, or somebody like that. And on the one hand, it's cool because like, oh yeah, I was just up there, you know, but on the other hand, you know, to your point, it's a completely different vibe that night. Obviously the seats are a little bit more filled. But yeah, I mean, I think that strategy, because to your point, you're going to have to pay the mortgage regardless of how often you use the building. Right. So yeah, you might as well, even if you get 20 butts in seats on a weeknight, that's still 20 butts that you didn't have otherwise, you know? And obviously then once you get kind of some of the bigger comics, you know, your Pete Davidson's, your Craig Robinson, you know, those are folks I've watched there, you know, then it's like, okay, now I'm expecting, you know, a little bit more oomph in my sales, you know? So I think that's a perfect strategy.
Yeah. In fact, I had done every now and then, like when I went to this particular comedy club over the weekend, I was looking around going, okay, they seat roughly 275 people. We paid roughly $40 per ticket. With everything all said and done, this place should be pulling in around, I want to say it was something like $80,000 a weekend just in ticket sales. And nice. Then, and that was just ticket sales. That's not including alcohol. It's not including anything else. So I'm sitting there looking around going, okay, they should be pulling in roughly $200,000 per week times 52 weeks a year, times. Now this is of course based upon the idea that they're sold out every weekend and all. So they kind of does, this is kind of a best case scenario.
Right.
But you know, in the back of my head, I'm sitting there going, okay, what's their back end? You know, what are they really looking like? How many people are they hiring? You know, I saw their manager was running around like crazy, you know, bussing tables. So I'm like, all right, well, obviously they don't have enough people or the workload's too much.
Yeah.
And that was the other thing I was looking at. You know, I was looking at it from the perspective of the wait staff. Yeah. You know, I was looking at, you know, having a bonus program. I was looking at having a menu item. Hey, buy the, you know, the kitchen staff a round of beer, you know, things like that. Just dumb little things to kind of, I wanted to make sure that everybody involved, whether that be the fan, the wait staff, the comic, everybody had a wonderful time. Yeah, you may spend a few extra bucks than you would if you just went to, you know, hole in the wall place down the street, but you know, you're gonna have a better memory and a better time.
Yeah. It seems like you really have a passion and a love for it, and that you really care about the experience of everyone involved. Question, did you get to look at the green rooms at the clubs that you were at, because that's I heard Daniel laugh. Okay, yes. And
one did not have a green room.
Oh,
they were literally they had a seat, a little chair, in the little ticket booth with a little where the ticker girl sits. And I was like, okay, that's not really nice. And the other one had a green room. It was basically a broom closet, which I'm kind of like, I don't know. So one thing I was looking
Isn't that funny though, that a comedy club that needs comedians has no place for them to wait.
Yeah.
Doesn't afford them the place to relax between sets. It's insane. I'm like, what are you doing? I've been to clubs like that where you're like, what? No green room here? What's wrong with you?
Yeah. So the green room plans that I had drawn up with a buddy of mine who's an architect, I had looked at a long, very comfortable leather couch. Because if you have anything other than leather, it's not, you know, something's going to happen. I looked at having a get ready spot, almost like a vanity. So that way you can look at yourself and you're like, all right, do I look good? So, you know, boogers hanging my nose, whatever. I wanted to have a small stocked fridge for you guys. So bottles of water, you know, any kind of drinks you wanted. I wanted a button where you could get a hold of somebody. You know, hey, listen, I need X, Y, and Z. We'll take care of it. I even looked at potentially adding a shower, just in the back, you know, hey, you're running, you did your set, whatever, but you know, you're sweating like crazy. You're like, I look awful. You're in a panic, whatever. Basically I wanted it to be almost like a little mini apartment, a little sanctuary. And then there would be a very, intimidating looking man standing out front who says, nobody gets in here unless the comic says you can come in here.
Yeah.
And I know a guy who'd happily do that job.
Yeah, and the big thing is having a restroom in there too, because a lot of times you have to leave the green room in places to go to the restroom, and now you're engaged. Like, people want, hey, you're the footy guy. No, no, no. You're like, okay, I'm trying to like think, get it ready for my set. I'm trying to think about all the stuff. Like, what? I saw you last week, or I saw you this thing. You're like, okay, great. You know, so I know people that have been there. I mean, one club that I can think of that I know of, I think they ended up building a bathroom in the green room because too many times comedians were coming out of the green room that, and they were the, you know, the headliner, and they had to go to the bathroom, and people would accost them in the hallway, like, oh my gosh, can I get a picture with you? Can I get a picture? Like, oh my gosh. Like, so I felt so bad for them. Now I'm going to shout his name out because he talked to me before and he's a great guy. If I were you, I'd reach out to Al Martin. He owns Broadway Comedy Club in New York, and I believe he opened a new one in Santa Monica, if I remember right. So he's been a comedy club owner for like 30, 40 years, something like that. Yeah, he's owned Broadway Comedy Club. He's owned a couple comedy clubs, and he is a wealth of knowledge. And I personally performed at Broadway Comedy Club, and I have to tell you that it was one of the most fun times I've ever had. Now, for the downstairs place, they didn't have a green room for comedians to sit at. We had to sit like in the back off of the side, which was okay, whatever, no big deal. But a green room is always better because then we can go over our notes, we can go over our set list, we can go over whatever. If you want to have converse with each other after the show, we can, or whatever. And then the other thing I would say is, in the green room, have a monitor for the comedians to be able to see what's going on in the show, so that they can see maybe the crowd's they can hear too. Maybe the crowd's rowdy. Maybe people are heckling. Maybe whatever. And you're like, oh,
yeah. Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah. I remember seeing some people talk about that, and I didn't have that in my notes. I'll add that to my notes here. Yeah. Let's chat afterwards, and I'll grab his contact information from you.
Yeah. Yeah. He's the man. He's great. Danny, do you have anything extra to add? Ask Travis, or anything you want to add?
No. I mean, I think the green room dialogue is good. I can't imagine the shower scenario, but I mean, I guess if you're Robin Williams, you know, then sure.
Yeah.
That's one I hadn't heard before, but I've definitely been to many a green room where it's just, you go in and it's just cold nachos, you know, Red Bull. You're like, I don't want either of these things, but you know, but there's a TV, you know, there's like an Xbox or something. And it's like, oh, okay, well, this is, you know, if I want to just zone out and not think about my show, great. Otherwise, there's plenty of a hallway to pace back and forth, you know? So yeah, no, I like the thought from stage to green room, you know, it's all good stuff.
And that's probably the other good thing is if you could build the green room off to a entrance side of the stage. So when people, they don't have to cut through the crowd, or they don't have to walk, they can just kind of come out of the green room, go to the side of the stage, go up, be presented, then leave and go back in the exact same way. You know, and that what I always found was easier for comedians is like, you just have that quick in and out type situation. And
yeah, in fact, that was one thing that I had looked at when we were kind of mocking up an ideal situation, and we were thinking the same thing, you know, either behind the stage or off to the side, and it was just a direct shot to this.
Don't go the Comedy Store route where it's like nooks and crannies and like crypt hallways and like you got a maze to get to like that's like oh my gosh, there's so many little hallways and passages in the Comedy Store. I've only seen like three of them, but I hear there's like a million of them, and it's insane to navigate. And like I was like, all right, I don't want to try to find anything in here. But and if you don't know, that's the other thing is if you don't know, you'll get lost back there.
Oh, yeah.
You'll never know where you're at. So it's
coming to the stage eventually.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I know how to get to like two of the places like where the comedians hang out, but like there, I know there's like a couple other places to go, and I'm not even gonna try. Sure. Like unless somebody guides me, and I had other comedians like, hey, this is where we're going. Great. Otherwise, I'm never gonna.
Well, that's also something that I wanted to have at the club as well. Was you know the option of the comics to be able to hang out after the show with either other comics or some staff or whatever and just bullshit. Just have, you know, because the one thing that I've noticed that most comics talk about is when they talk about a club they particularly like, they would sit there and say, oh, yeah, you remember when I was with so-and-so and we were over here and we were bullshit until 3 a.m? Great. You know, I don't want there to be a time where, okay, show's over, we're cleaning up, get the hell out, thank you for your time, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, Travis, I appreciate you spending time with us. I appreciate you being a fan of comedy, wanting to make things better for comedians, want to make a great place for people to come see comedy because that's important. Live comedy is the best comedy. Where can people – do you want people to reach out to you if they have ideas or whatever? Like, what's the best place for them to do that?
You know, they could probably just email me, honestly. I don't have anything – yeah, I guess so. Why not? If they want to, they can email me. It's my first initial and last name, so T. Beeler, T like Tom, B like boy, E-E-H-L-E-R @gmail.com, and they can shoot me an email with whatever they want.
Perfect. All right, Danny, how can people get a hold of you? How can they check out your stuff?
I was just going to say, Travis, I hope you name your comedy club The Beehive. those are my only thoughts. those are my only thoughts.
Nice.
Yeah. I'll take my royalty check. I'll give you mine. I'm just kidding. Yeah. If you want to follow me, D Howellini, again, you Google my name, you're going to get me and only me. If you're looking for a nonprofit, okaizu.org, good life plug there. So, all the things.
Perfect. Okay, guys.
All right. You can check me out. JamesDCrevice.com, comedypreneur.com. Please. If you're listening to this on the podcast, go to YouTube, go there, like, subscribe, follow us. We need more subscribers. We're trying to grow. It's growing every week. I appreciate every single person that watches and subscribes. Let's keep sharing this. And this is how we get more information like this. It's how we get people like Travis. It's how we got people like Al Martin. It's how we get great guests that want to talk about comedy and want to make the comedy world a better place. So thank you again, Travis. Thank you, Danny. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Have a great one. Bye.